Good afternoon. This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Friday, May the 27th. I'm Angela Denning, and we're going to start off with an update on the Salmon Derby. We have some winners already. The first fish caught by a woman, Annette Olson, caught a 19.5-pound white king. The first fish caught by a man, Alec Funt. And the pre-derby drawing went to Serena Newman. So far, the top three fish are as follows. Scott Hersey in first place with a 28-pounder. In second place, Annette Olson with a 19.5-pounder. And then Alec Funt with a 13.1-pound king. Petersburg police are investigating hate graffiti found just outside of town. Here at the gravel pit, it's a nice and mild day. Birds are chirping, and you can see Frederick Sound in the distance through the trees. It's easy to see why this is a popular hangout for young people. It's located about 3 miles out of town on Frederick Point Road, far enough to be away from adults, but easily accessed, sitting right along the main road. Dark ash remnants of bonfires dot the rocky area. Some colorful graffiti marks nearby boulders like a smiley face in neon green. What caught the eye of officers out on patrol this morning was done in black lettering.
Hate graffiti, swastikas, white power, but hail Hitler.
That's Officer Corey Raleigh with the Petersburg Police.
Anytime that you have this type of hate symbol in a community, it raises concerns. We're hoping, and I say hoping, that's kind of maybe not the right words, but that this is teenagers just as a prank. But when you have hate symbols such as Hitler, swastikas, white power, that does have a concern, especially in a community as diverse as ours, that we have people out there that are willing to put this type of stuff publicly out there that is such a heinous act in history that people have had to deal with that type of hatred.
The graffiti is unsettling to the local police department, but perhaps has affected Raleigh the most. He has experience with hate crimes in his past work.
I have investigated these type of crimes before on a very high level in another community that involved actually federal convictions of people involved in these type of hate crimes. And we're hoping, again, that this is just something that's just a random act, but know that the police department and the chief of police are willing to find out who these people are and to make sure that that it's addressed immediately. We do not want this in the community. We do not feel it's appropriate for anywhere, obviously in the United States, but especially in Petersburg. We have so many people visit here from different parts of the country, and if anybody was to come take a ride out here on the roads just to enjoy the outdoors and see this within our community, it could have a detrimental effect, especially with social media, if it got out there that Petersburg was known as a place for anything that had to do with a hate crime. If they were to put that out there and that was attached to Petersburg, that would be a tragedy for our community.
The Petersburg Police Department wants to get to the bottom of the new graffiti at the gravel pit. They're looking to get more information about who's responsible. They're asking people to contact the police department, and they are taking anonymous tips. An Alaska Airlines executive gave some details during a Chamber of Commerce lunch at Ketchikan about the company's recently announced merger with Virgin Air. Director of Sales and Community Marketing Scott Haberstad, who is a former Ketchikan resident, also stressed that while Alaska Airlines might consider it in the future, there are no plans to let dogs earn miles for their people, at least not yet. He says that's a question he hears a lot.
That's the number one question we get. I mean, inevitably, the question will come out, it's, when's my animal going to start getting miles, good for goodness sakes? And we've looked at it multiple times, and it's something we'll continue to look at because I know the questions are going to keep coming up, but it's nothing that's in the pipes.
He gave an overview of Alaska Airlines, which annually earns about $5 billion and serves about 32 million passengers. They expect to add another 7 million customers after the merger with Virgin is finalized, hopefully by 2018. Haberstad says the merger will add only a couple more destinations to Alaska's airlines' current list, but it expands other opportunities.
So today we go to the East Coast from Portland and Seattle. Tomorrow we'll go to the East Coast from Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, and L.A. to all the same places we're already serving out of Seattle and Portland, which increases our network significantly and adds a great deal of efficiencies.
The merger still has to go through various approvals, but Haberstad says there's no reason for it not to succeed. Once it does, he says Virgin will become Alaska Airlines. Alaska, though, will look at Virgin's business practices to see what could and should be retained.
Virgin is different. I mean, it's an experience. I mean, you board listening to Beyonce. It's got purple mood lighting in the airplanes. It's a different experience, but it's a good experience, and it's fresher, it's new. While I don't think you'll board to Beyonce on us in the future, there might be a little bit of an uptick, a little bit of a little fresher brand coming from us.
Virgin also comes with a fleet of Airbus planes, which is different from Alaska Airlines' fleet of Boeing aircraft. Haberstad says that the Virgin fleet is mostly leased, which will give Alaska Airlines a chance to try them out and decide whether or not to keep them. Some of the best drinking water anywhere may be just a little bit better now. Sitka officials last week cut the ribbon on a new $8 million ultraviolet disinfection plant for the town's water supply. KCAW's Robert Woolsey took the tour and files this report.
The great thing about Sitka's water is how easy it is to trace. It literally falls from the sky into Blue Lake and the surrounding watershed, and maybe just a few days later flows out our taps. But for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, that is not enough. Thanks to the Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule, Sitka's water now takes a detour through an innocuous gray building with a blue metal roof at the Sawmill Cove Industrial Park.
Here we have the generator room. This is the standby generator. If we lose
power, on the ground floor of the UV disinfection facility are offices and storage rooms for chlorine and fluoride. Not much to write home about. But down in the basement, it's a plumber's paradise.
Oh, my.
City engineer Stephen Weatherman leads a small group of residents into a room of massive blue pipes, each 24 inches diameter, and steers us toward three silver-colored ultraviolet reactors.
This is where all the action takes place. Like you say, there's these tubes running in and through here. I think there's like nine of them. And they're just like a fluorescent light, except they put out ultraviolet, which is really dangerous. You know, that's why it's all enclosed. We have special masks upstairs that people have to wear if they get into here and they're on. But it's no different than the ultraviolet you get from the sun. It's just more intense.
The ultraviolet light targets Cryptosporidium, a microscopic parasite that is the leading cause of waterborne illness in the United States. Cryptosporidium have an outer shell that allows them to live outside of humans and animals and also makes them resistant to chlorine disinfection. Right now, about 2,500 gallons of water per minute are flowing through just one of three UV reactors in this plant. That's less than a second of exposure for any Cryptosporidium. So, how well is it working? Deputy Environmental Superintendent Shiloh Williams can't really say yet.
We generally don't do a lot of testing that isn't required. We have this UV facility in here as a barrier for Cryptosporidium. The Cryptosporidium test is quite expensive, so we haven't actually tested it after, post-UV since this has been in. We haven't had any reason to at this point.
Back outside the plant in the warm May sunshine, Sitka's environmental superintendent, Mark Buggins, believes it's better to be safe than sorry. Blue Lake was already a very clean source of surface water, even before the new EPA rules.
Certainly you don't know. If Cryptosporidium's there and someone gets sick from it now, you probably just don't know, right? You just get like an upset stomach and diarrhea or something and attribute it to something else. But we've tested for Cryptosporidium in Blue Lake's water and found like very, very small amounts, like one, out of 1,000 gallons. Right. So the dosage is really low. You need to drink more than one or two Cryptosporidium spores to get sick. Mm-hmm. But the people that get affected by that you're really protecting are the immunocompromised, people that are on chemotherapy or people that are sick already or stuff, and where you get dehydrated and it could really severely hurt you.
Even at $8 million, ultraviolet disinfection was the lesser of three options for Sitka to comply with the Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule. Installing granular filtration, like a huge swimming pool filter, would have run to $24 million. Membrane filtration would have cost $46 million. State grants paid for over $6 million of this project. The rest was covered by loans and about $20,000 from Sitka's water fund. Operating costs for the UV plant, including electricity bought from the city, will run about $360,000 a year. Buggins says electrical engineers are integrating the computer controls of the UV plant and the existing water system. Soon, water employees will be able to control everything from a laptop, even at home. For Buggins, who's been running Sitka's water for 26 years and has plans to retire, this is an intriguing possibility.
Are you going to keep your password after you retire?
Yeah, maybe. They might want me to.
And will UV treatment make Sitka's water taste any different? Once the state has signed off on the new UV plant, Buggins says it likely will be easier to meet disinfection standards with lower amounts of chlorine, just enough chlorine to be detectable at the extremities of Sitka's water system. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
It's almost summer in Haines, and that means several big events are on the horizon. The Haines Police Department is working on just how to keep the peace and maintain order at these annual occasions, which draw thousands of people into town. With the 24th annual Great Alaska Craft Beer and Homebrew Festival happening this weekend, the local police department is pondering a new tact, plain closed officers at the event. KHNS's Julia Rogers has more.
Haines Brewfest, the Kluane Chilkat Bike Relay, and the Southeast Alaska State Fair draw large crowds to this small community each year and are undoubtedly a huge boon to the local economy. Acting Police Chief Josh Dryden says, for the most part, they're fun events that provoke few shenanigans. But he says every year there are a handful of incidents. Some years, extra police are brought in to help with crowd control. But this year, for the popular Brewfest, the department might take a different approach when it comes to ensuring revelers and vendors have fun while abiding by the law.
You know, as soon as somebody sees an officer in uniform, if they're conducting any kind of behavior that the officer might, you know, pay attention to, they'll stop. But as soon as he walks away, they'll start again. So I think having somebody maybe a little more inconspicuous might help.
Dryden says, as far as he knows, this would be the first time the local police department is considering having an officer in plain clothes at the beer festival.
He's just watching, just making sure everybody's having a good time. He's not there to trap anybody. He's not there to, you know, just to be sneaky. He's just there to watch. It's just a tactic that usually works during special events. Ones I've worked down south, there's numerous plain clothes.
This weekend will draw nearly 2,000 beer enthusiasts over the two-day affair. Dryden says last year there were fewer episodes compared to 2014, which was a little rowdier. He says, for the most part, Brewfest goers are, quote, happy drunks.
I expect the vendors and the bartenders to maintain their integrity and, you know, do their job and don't, you know, overserve somebody to excess.
Jessica Edwards has worked with the Southeast Alaska State Fair since 2010. She's been the director for a few years now. And she says the brewers and servers that come for Brew Festival each year are professional and conscientious. She says her organization works closely with several borough departments to make sure the event runs smoothly and safely.
We've had a very cooperative relationship with the police department. We've always encouraged them to please be a part of the festival as much as they can. You know, we're certainly not asking them to do security for us. We have our own mechanisms for that, but we have always really appreciated their presence. It's been very positive. They've interacted with the public, and we felt like it really has lent both a welcoming and a safe feeling.
But Edwards says this year seems a little different, with the possibility of police patrolling out of uniform. It changes the feel from fun and light to something more sinister.
And while I'm not particularly concerned about our ability to comply with the law, it definitely, to me, represents a bit of a change in the cooperation that we've had in the past. It feels like it assumes a bit of wrongdoing or something. There's a place it comes from that isn't the same.
Edwards says she wants to work with Sergeant Dryden and the department to address any concerns they have. All alcohol wranglers are certified with the state's training in alcohol management course, and the maximum 2-ounce pour is enforced. Beer Fest brings in hundreds of visitors, and Edwards says is getting more and more statewide and national media attention.
It's an event that puts us on the map here in Haines, and so we certainly want it to continue to go well and to be positive, and we're hoping that we can continue that solid spirit of collaboration and coordination and cooperation with all entities involved, including the police.
Of course, with so many people in a confined area drinking beer for several hours, Edwards says some concerns are understandable. But for the most part, the event is calm and cheerful.
I feel like we have really achieved an incredibly mellow vibe at this festival.
Interim manager Brad Ryan said he'd rather see all officers in uniform so that their presence is more of a preventative measure.
And it stops issues before they happen, and they're unidentifiable.
Statistics aren't readily available for the number of arrests or incidents during past Brewfests, but Edwards says she knows traffic is an issue, and there have been times when they've 86'd someone for misbehaving. It's bound to happen.
There's a ton of people here for this weekend. Our town is small, and so we feel the visitor impact in a way that is absorbed a little more easily in bigger communities. But the impact is also positive in some ways, too. You know, many ways, I'd say more, hopefully more than not.
Last-minute preparations are going well, according to the organizers, with shipments arriving, volunteers at the ready, and the chef for the Friday night dinner foraging in the woods for fresh edibles to add to the feast. 20 vendors will be on hand with a variety of ales and lagers for sampling. The connoisseurs tasting starts at noon on Saturday and is only open to 200 ticket holders. It's a chance for beer enthusiasts to get a more intimate tasting with time for questions and answers with the brewers. The main event starts at 1 p.m. on Saturday in Dalton City. Reporting in Haines, I'm Jillian Rogers.
It's Friday, May the 27th, and that means it's time for our Stocks Report with Dan Berg. He's a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Bellevue, Washington, and he's joining us now by telephone. Hi, Dan.
Angela.
How's it going this week?
We had a surprisingly good week, and there wasn't a whole lot of data to explain it. But
okay.
You know, it looks as though the manufacturing end of the U.S. economy is a bit in the doldrums. The PMI National Survey from Market came out, and it shows very, very modest expansion. 50 is the expansion line, and it came out at 50.5. We also had a somewhat weak survey from the same company regarding services, which is a little stronger. But basically, the market is saying maybe that stuff is in the rearview mirror, and things are looking up. And one thing that did strike some people's notice was that the leading economic indicators went up again for last month, and they are now at a cycle high, meaning since the Great Recession, the leading indicators haven't been quite this high. So the market's looking ahead, and it's also shrugging off the possibility of a rate hike that's coming in July. And over in Asia, there was not a whole lot of news. There was a G7 meeting in Tokyo, which the president and others attended, and there was no agreement on cooperation for stimulating economies, so it was all U.S. news this week. So the Dow had a good week, closed at 17,873. That's a 373-point gain on the week. The NASDAQ closed at 4,933, which was a 3.4% gain. That's not a small move in 1 week. And the S&P 500 closed at 2,099. That was a 2.3% gain. And helping the overall tone of the market is the beaten-down energy sector. Oil prices briefly went above $50 a barrel for the West Texas pricing, and it closed at $49.47. And just briefly again, part of what's causing this is that there are worries about overseas supply. Big exporters such as Venezuela and also Nigeria, are some of those supplies are in question. And gold had another poor week that closed down to $1,209 an ounce. That was off 41 points for the week. I guess some of the analysts are saying that as the U.S. economy is looking okay and the U.S. dollar strengthens, demand for gold recedes somewhat. And if that's the case, that was certainly a big effect this week. Over on the bond market, there was very little change in yields. The 30-year Treasury at 2.65% and the 10 at 1.85%. And as I said, the market seems to be pricing in a rate hike perhaps later this summer. The Bloomberg News Service says that there's a 60% chance, according to the options markets, of a small rate hike come July. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, thanks for that information. And then what can we touch on with individual stocks this week?
Well, the ever-controversial Monsanto, the maker of genetically modified seeds, symbol MON, that closed up to $109.09. They rejected a $62 billion takeover offer from the German chemical giant Bayer. However, Bayer is not deterred by this, and there is a chance that bid could go higher. Earnings season is has ended, but Best Buy announced their earnings symbol BBY. That closed down to 32.03. They are lacking a blockbuster product at this time. Alibaba, the big Chinese online retailer, symbol BABA, that closed at 80.97. They have a government accounting inquiry here in the U.S., which caused the stock to sell off this week. Other earnings reports, HP Enterprise, half of the old Hewlett-Packard, symbol HPE, announced earnings which were much better than expected. That soared to $18.26. They also announced that their old IT services department will be merged with Computer Sciences. And then for Northwest issues, Costco, symbol COST, had a very nice earnings report that was up to $148.50 at the close today. And Alaska Air, symbol ALK, hung in there in spite of higher oil prices and closed at $66.82.
Yeah, when you throw figures like $62 billion out there, Dan, then it's kind of like a eye-opener. Oh, and then they don't, and then it's not enough. They're going to wait for maybe $100 billion? Who knows?
Well, you know, when companies get large and they have big sustainable businesses, they become very valuable indeed. The value of Apple is over $500 billion, Angela.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing that information with us this week. We will be checking in with you again next week.
Yes, and next week is the employment report on Friday, and that will certainly move the market one way or another, especially since we're looking at indications whether or not interest rates will go up. That is something that people will be watching very closely. Also, there's going to be news on personal income and spending, and wages have been going up lately to a modest degree, but a fairly persistent one, and so people will be looking at that.
Okay. We'll check in with you next week to see how that all goes.
You bet. Thanks, Angela.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye. Dan Berg is a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Bellevue, Washington.
Listeners are reminded that the information provided is general in nature and may not apply to their personal investment situation. Individuals should consult with their chosen financial professional before making any decisions. Investment products and services are offered through Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC, member of SIPC. Neither Wells Fargo Advisors nor its financial professionals are legal or tax advisors.